Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're discussing savings to the moon, dodging debt collectors, and stingy shack.
When you say stingy Shaq, you mean stingy Shaquille O'Neal.
That's right.
The actual individual. We're going to talk about...
Size 21 shoes and all. That fella.
Shaq, he's like our patron saint. We've talked about him on the show a few times, and we're going to get to a story later on about him. We've got several headlines that we're going to get to during this episode, and we're going to talk about how they apply to you and your money. But first, we are having a beer hang tonight. If you're listening to this the day we release it, which is Friday, November 5th, we are hanging out at Monday Night Garage at 7:45 p.m. tonight, and we hope to see you there. I know a lot of y'all are across the country and you listen to us, but we know some listeners are here in Atlanta, and so we hope to meet some of you in person in real life.
Yeah, I'm not expecting our Canadian and Australian listeners to hop on a plane.
Of course not.
And get here by this evening, but hopefully looking forward to meeting some of you listeners tonight at Monday Night Garage, and that'll be, yeah, like Matt said, at 7:45. Matt, I just want to mention too, last week we talked about my potentially ridiculous decision to buy a World Series ticket, and now the Braves have won the World Series, my friend.
And you can say that you were there.
I really think my presence did it for us. But no. Well, and we finished up actually in Houston in six games, a dominant win. And I will say it was worth it. It was worth the money.
Worth every penny.
To get to be at that World Series game. It was a lot of fun.
Great vibes going on.
Yeah. I mean, the place where the Braves play, it's kind of out in the burbs now. We haven't really talked about this on the show, but I used to bike to a whole lot of games, and I just don't really go to nearly as many as I used to.
Dude, we would go together. Like, yeah. We did a lot. Like, Kate and I would even bike to go see the Braves play because you could pick up tickets for like $5.
Oh, it was so much cheaper to go to a game back then,
yes,
for sure.
But now, literally, we have not been to a single game up at the Battery.
Yeah, and I think I might bike my girls to the parade today in downtown Atlanta. But yeah, that's enough about the Braves win. I just wanted to say it was worth it. And I just wanted to also quickly mention while we're doing some housekeeping here that Matt and I are wrong sometimes. And
we are not infallible.
No, that's true. And by the way, if you ever have anything that you want to share with us, something we've gotten wrong, a way we can improve, we have a place where you can do that at howtomoney.com/do better. We love to hear your suggestions. But we were wrong earlier this week when we mentioned that a Chase credit card bonus, sign-up bonus, was $1,250. That had recently changed. And now the point sign-up bonus is 60,000 instead of 100,000.
It's 60,000 points, but with the additional bonus, you're looking at a $750 bonus. It's a far cry from $1,250, but that being said, it is still a fantastic bonus.
Yeah, it is. It is. But we're wrong. It's not as rich as
not
it
as
used
rich
to be,
as it used to be.
Sadly,
yeah. That honeymoon phase is over.
right. Still a great card. And also, one other thing we were wrong about last week, Matt. We mentioned the timing for the Public Service Loan Forgiveness waiver,
PSLF,
and we made it sound like you only had a few days until Halloween. But you have until Halloween next year.
Yeah. October 31st was correct. We had that date right. Not this year though. 2022. And
exactly.
So, yeah, if any folks out there were stressed out and rushed to make sure that they filled that thing out, well, congratulations. You don't have to worry about it anymore.
You got it off your to-do list.
But for everyone else who just thought, you know what, I'm just not going to get around to doing that, well, you have another year.
Yes,
so
you do.
You've got 12 months.
And sorry about lighting a fire under you needlessly. All right, but Matt, let's do move on and get to the Friday flight and mention the stories we found interesting this week. And let's start off by talking about cash money. The theme of everything, it seems like, for the past year or so, maybe a little bit longer, has been to the moon. Crypto, stocks, real estate.
Stonks to the moon.
Yeah. Everything's been like going on the up and up, up and to the right. But a new survey from Bank of America finds that savings rates are through the roof too. And it turns out that 70% of Gen Zers specifically padded their savings account over the past year. And although I would say it was hard not to be saving more for a lot of people.
That's true.
Because of the massive amount of stimulus dollars that have been flowing directly into those accounts.
The inability to spend any money when things were locked down.
Exactly. Yeah. Your money flowing into your account and you're not going out. And so just by default, your savings grow. This is great news for individuals, right? But the personal balance sheets, I would say, of most Americans, they're just better off than they've been in a long time. And this new survey just reflects how strong of a position, of a savings position, that so many Americans are in.
That's true. But, you know, here's an important question, which is it possible to have too much money in savings? There is nearly $10 trillion in savings accounts that are earning close to nothing right now. $10 trillion. That is a crazy amount of money. And in fact, with inflation continuing its death march, that money is earning less than nothing in those accounts. It's actually doing the opposite. It is slowly deteriorating. And so while we are fans of saving money, it is possible to be too focused on saving and not focused enough on investing. And in fact, that same Bank of America survey, they found that only 26% of those same Gen Zers had contributed to their retirement accounts with that extra money that fell into their laps. That is not a good use of that money. We want to see more of that money, assuming they've got their emergency fund set up.
Right.
We want to see more of that money put to use in a more active way.
Exactly, yeah. While keeping savings on hand for a rainy day is crucial, right? We're not saying savings is for the birds, that
no.
It's stupid. Investing is what's going to grow your wealth. And so, yeah, don't neglect to have some liquid cash on hand, but don't overdo it either. And if you're looking for a better place to stash maybe some of your medium-term savings, money that you're not investing for 30 years down the road, but money you might need in the next two or three, I-bonds are looking better and better these days. We've been talking more and more about I-bonds as inflation has become a bigger risk to your money. And it turns out, you know, new rates as of November 1st are just a hair over 7% now.
Oh, yeah.
On the I-bonds. So, yeah, if you're looking for risk-free returns, this is a great place to stash some of that money you don't feel comfortable investing at the moment. Maybe you have over-padded your savings account and you're like, I got to find a way to make more than 0.5%. Well, you can electronically purchase those I-bonds on treasurydirect.gov. We'll put a link in the show notes. You can purchase up to $10,000 per person per year, and then you can purchase an additional $5,000, up to an additional $5,000 with your tax return money next year. And so, yeah, if you're kind of in that in-between spot, I-bonds are just an awesome vehicle for to place your money in right now.
Totally. And I actually did that this morning.
Nice.
I opened an account. I had not done that before, and it did not take very long at all. I will say the website is pretty clunky. Felt like it was built 20 years ago.
It probably was.
Literally.
Running on Microsoft DOS.
Exactly. Right? And so I felt a little odd, you know, punching in all of that sensitive information, but literally you can open an account today and you can fund it and make a purchase. I maxed that out, actually, and I bought $10,000 worth of I-bonds because I had some savings, like you said, that I was thinking about investing, thought about putting that directly in the market, but instead, this is another way to earn on that money and to diversify what I am doing with that money. And it's worth mentioning that, keep in mind, this is money that you can't touch for at least 12 months.
That's
and
right.
So beyond that, you can take the money out, but you're going to have to pay back 3 months worth of interest. But even still, and even if rates adjust, it is still probably the best place for you to get that guaranteed rate of return on your money.
Yeah, not a great place for the emergency fund, but it is a good place for savings,
exactly.
Right? Medium-term savings.
That's right. Yeah, and since we're talking about some of these fundamental aspects of personal finance, let's quickly talk about credit card debt, because that is down as well. The average credit card balance was about $6,500 back in 2019. It is $5,500 now. And so this is great news on multiple levels. Obviously, it's great for your finances, but a new study from the University of Missouri, they found that people who carried consistently high levels of unsecured debt, so credit card debt, were, and this is straight from their report, were 76% more likely to have pain that interfered with their daily life than people with no unsecured debt.
Oh, snap.
That's crazy. It really is a remarkable study. And, you know, we've discussed the IQ drop that debt can cause. But this just striking correlation between higher levels of debt, worse physical health, this is one worth keeping an eye on, because using debt vehicles like credit cards to enhance your lifestyle, that's a dangerous game to play. How you handle money, it truly does have direct implications on every area of your life, including your mental and your physical health.
Yeah, that was shocking to read. I did not know that. Obviously, we knew the mental health aspect, but the physical health, like that deteriorates too.
It makes sense, man.
Yeah. Because
the mind controls the body.
That's right. That's right. Know? But it's just kind of interesting to see the numbers.
Yeah.
And it just makes me think that we should be telling our listeners more and more the perils of debt, because, yeah, it influences every part of your life. It reaches its tentacles in everywhere, that's for sure, and causes misery. But here's another thing. Did you know that you don't necessarily have to pay every debt that you owe? No, I'm not joking, and I'm not trying to sell you anything, right? Not all debt, as it turns out, is collectible. And we haven't really talked about this before on the show, Matt. We haven't talked about the statute of limitations laws, but David Lazarus from the LA Times had a piece this week detailing how the statute of limitations works when it comes to debts that you owe. And this is something that like we haven't really talked about, and most folks don't really have a clue about. They don't realize that there is a clock ticking when it comes to debts that they haven't paid yet. And we'll put up a link actually so you can see what the statute of limitation is in your state, because it varies from state to state. Mm-hmm. It's 4 years on unpaid debt in California. It's 6 where we live in Georgia. And so that means that legally a debt collector will not be able to sue you for any payments that you might owe after that time is up. And here's the thing, though. This is an ethically gray area because you still owe the debt. And we would say...
It doesn't mean you no longer owe the debt.
Right. It's not forgiven.
Right.
It just means that they cannot sue you in a court of law in order to make you pay. And so we would say that you should still pay the debt if you're able to. But here's the thing. If you're not able to, we want you to know that the statute of limitations has your back. It's something... Actually, a listener just this week emailed and said... Really, you should tell How to Money listeners about statute of limitations. I saw this article by David Lazarus, and I was like, this is the perfect time mm-hmm. just to mention it, because it is one of those things where if you do not have the financial resources to pay a debt, there is a time limit on a debt collector's ability to try to get that money out of your hands.
Yeah. And so, yeah, ethically or morally, there's a gray area. When it comes to your ability to get sued, though, it's black or white.
Right.
And when it comes to your credit score, it's black and white as well, because the statute of limitations, This has nothing to do with your credit score. Even though they can no longer sue you for that money, it can still completely wreck your credit score.
Mm-hmm.
And David, he also wrote about how some more unscrupulous collectors will try and kind of pull a fast one on you in order to do what's called reviving an old debt. Honestly, it's a lot like what it sounds. They try and get you to pay like this tiny amount, almost as tiny of an amount as you can towards that debt, which revives it, meaning that the clock starts ticking again. You basically hit the reset button, and then that collector can hound you to pay up. And if you don't, then they can legally take you to court again.
They might sound real sweet, and they're like just pay $10 today. If you just pay $10 today,
just do me a favor.
Yeah,
all right? Yeah.
And they're like, well, okay, I guess I can pay $10.
Yeah.
But then that restarts the clock, and so that puts you over the barrel again if you owe a lot of debt to this collector.
And it's not just about paying a small amount too, but even agreeing to enter into a new debt payment plan,
right?
Even acknowledging that this debt exists, these are all things that can trigger the reset. And so be sure to be incredibly careful in how you communicate and what you communicate if you are in touch with a debt collector.
All right. Yeah. So word to the wise there, if you owe debt, just watch out for these tricks. You know, it's like we said, it's a good thing to pay your debts. If you have taken on a loan and you've said, I will pay this, we think it's the right thing to do. It's your moral obligation to pay any sort of debt that you've taken out, but just know your legal rights too. And Matt, let's quickly talk about gig work for a second. The FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, just sent notices to some of the major gig companies telling them to stop making promises that they can't deliver on when it comes to worker pay. Companies like Uber, Lyft, Instacart, DoorDash, they're all under increased scrutiny when it comes to how much their gig work army is actually making versus what they're being told they're going to make. And so I guess a little embellishment is happening here with some of these companies. And we actually, we talked about the insidious nature of gig work just last month on the show.
Maybe some of the folks over there at the FTC listen to How to Money.
That could be.
And maybe we should do an HTM FTC collab.
Oh, well, that'd be nice. That'd be fun. I'm for it.
Sounds like it wouldn't be fun.
Let's be honest. Dry as a bone. I think while gig work can be beneficial for some folks, we tried to highlight some of the pros of gig work in that episode. A lot of gig workers are left in the lurch on the pay front. They're being overpromised, underdelivered. And ultimately, I think we're all likely going to be paying more for gig services as these companies beef up what they pay workers in the future, especially under like the increased scrutiny of the federal government. But guess what? We said it then and we'll say it now. We're okay with that. If the gig economy is going to continue to grow, those pay promises are going to have to be kept and gig workers are going to have to be able to make a legitimate income, I think, if it's going to be sustainable.
That's right, Joel. And just like you said, higher prices, that's something that we can start to get used to the idea of paying more if these are services, if these are apps that you use now that you plan to continue to use. We've got several other stories that we're going to get to here in a minute. We're going to talk about lady investors. We're going to talk about Shaq being stingy, but first, a quick break.
All right, we're back and we've got more money stories to share with you. More stuff happening this week that affects your money, your finances. And Matt, the first thing we do in the second half of every Friday show is the ludicrous headline of the week.
Of the week.
And this one comes from Business Insider. And here is the headline. It's Wall Street's new sustainable investing fad is a scam. What'd you think about that headline?
Those are harsh words.
They are. It's like fighting words, man. Yeah. And let's give an update maybe on socially responsible investing. While ESG funds, which stands for Environmental Social Governance, they're not our favorites. Calling them a scam was a bit of an overreach, I would say.
Yeah, there you go.
An overreach on this Business Insider article. It was intended to get clicks maybe. That's what the internet does. But this article, along with one from Vox, that both were published this week, shed some light on what's happening in this space. Both pieces articulated some of the real problems with these funds, basically because socially responsible, and I put that in quotes, and ESG, they're such buzzwords right now in the investing space. Companies are launching and promoting these ESG funds more readily, and investors are taking the bait. They're putting more and more of their investment dollars into these supposedly green funds. And at the same time, they're paying higher fees to do so. We would say it's not all rainbows and kale salad on the ESG front, though. There are some problems with these funds. They're not a scam. We would disagree with that characterization from Business Insider. But there are some issues that we definitely need to consider before we start to put our money in them.
Yeah, ESG funds right now, they're hotter than fat-free in the 90s, which was incredibly hot. But like you said, dude, without like the proper definitions, people are just putting money into these ESG funds without fully realizing what they are and what they aren't getting. One person's ESG trash is going to be another person's treasure. So for instance, companies with maybe they've got a severe digital privacy problem, they might be lurking in that ESG fund. Or there might be a company that has publicly committed, you know, to taking green action through their company, but they haven't listed any steps to actually accomplish that goal. They might also be inside a fund like that as well.
Yeah, they might be singing a pretty tune. They might be like all talk and no action.
Exactly. And so when you've got just a lack of clear definitions like this, that means that the ESG space is still very much the Wild West. And so you might be wondering, like, should you be investing your money in one of these funds? And the answer here is that it really comes down to your personal values. It comes down to you doing the research if you believe that this is something that you should be putting your money towards. Don't start just regularly putting your money into a fund that you haven't taken the time to vet properly, because you might find yourself investing in companies that don't align with your values despite the promises that the fund is making, or despite just what the fund is called, or the fact that it has ESG in the name. And you know, another downside of investing in ESG funds can be a lack of diversification. For us, that's not really a problem, because that's why we're huge proponents of investing in the entire stock market. It's why I'm such a big fan of investing in the S&P 500. You get plenty of diversification, and we're also okay with the fact that there are going to be some companies within those indexes that may not perfectly align with our values. That's one area where I let my investments just be investments. And if I want to do something where I can make a more impactful change in my life, I do that proactively with additional money outside of my investments.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to think about it, Matt. And I think good people are going to come down on different sides of the ESG debate. But it's just important to note that not every ESG fund is created alike. And so, yeah, you got to do your due diligence before you start sticking your money inside of those funds. And you have to look at the expense ratios, because they're certainly going to be higher than most of the traditional index S&P 500 type funds that you just mentioned, a total stock market fund, the kind of funds that we typically push people towards, or we like to see our listeners invest in. You're definitely going to be paying higher fees than what those funds have to offer.
That's true.
But since we're talking about investing, let's talk about an article that friend of the show, Ron Lieber from the New York Times wrote this week, and it's about why female investors are better than their male counterparts.
Yeah.
And we want to say, first off, good job, ladies. Fantastic. Ron made some really good points in this article, many of which were based around a Fidelity survey. And what Ron actually said is that the way that women trade is the key to their success. Basically, women aren't trading stocks as frequently as their male counterparts. And Matt, we know this to be true. The more that you trade, the worse your results will typically be. And women are just better at staying the boring horse to build wealth over time
than men. Which is the way to go.
Yeah, at least on a statistical basis. And so the lessons we can learn from these results are really applicable for men and women, but it's good to see that, hey, there's something that the women are excelling at, and we should take a page from their book.
Yeah, there's something that us men have a lot to learn. And the stats, they actually tend to reflect a general lack of confidence for women, like when it comes to investing at all. But then the ones that do get started, they tend to see superior results. And on the flip side of the coin, like, that's because many men are overconfident, believing that they can outperform the market, which ends up harming their long-term returns. And so obviously these are generalizations. Like, there's going to be some dudes that are more than happy to passively invest in a total stock market fund, while there are going to be some women out there who are perusing the Wall Street Bets subreddit. And so it's our goal to see all How to Money listeners reach a confidence sweet spot when it comes to their investments. We want you to be confident enough to invest week in and week out more and more of your paycheck, but not so confident that you're going to tinker with your portfolio, or maybe you're going to take on too much risk by investing in, you know, the next meme stock of the moment, or maybe, you know, just to begin trading stocks like baseball cards. This is another reason too why
I don't think people trade baseball cards anymore, though.
Do the baseball card swap?
It makes me sad. They're doing virtual ones, man. NFTs, come on.
Really? No,
I don't know.
Kids are still sitting down and trading baseball cards.
I hope so.
Especially after this World Series win, baby! But I feel that this is another great reason why it's so important to have both partners in a relationship involved in their finances. I mean, specifically with hetero relationships, because you can both come to the table with that balance. I know that anytime I start thinking, okay, I'm going to do something a little bit different with our money, like, I take that to Kate and we talk about it, and she's able to provide that balance. She's able to be a ballast to me when it comes to the different risks that we take with our money. And when you're able to incorporate multiple viewpoints, I think that is going to be the key to doing the most positive things that you can do with your money, with your wealth.
Yeah, I don't know why, Matt, I'm getting the picture of like a bully on a playground. The kid that's getting picked on, it probably has very little confidence. And the kid that is doing the picking on is probably too confident. And you want to be, I don't know, the kid in the corner doing his own thing.
You don't want to be either of those. You want to be the kid, you know, swinging on the swing, having fun.
Exactly, exactly. And so, yeah, you want to find the confidence sweet spot and make sure that you are investing, but that you're not getting so cocky that you start to do crazy stuff, because
right,
you're going to end up with less money over time. And yeah, let's get to that Shaq story, Matt. Let's talk about one of our favorite ATLians that we've never had the pleasure of meeting, but maybe Shaq will come on the show one of these days. What do you think?
I would love that.
All right, Shaq, open invite anytime. But the title of this episode called him stingy, so he might actually decline. Sorry about that, Shaq. It was just a joke. It turns out that Shaq told friends of the show, Troy and Rashad, from the podcast Earn Your Leisure, they came on a while back, that he's not going to be giving any of his money to his sons in the future. And it's not because he doesn't love them. He specifically tells his kids, "We ain't rich. I'm rich."
Yeah.
And he went
I saw that clip. It's so good.
I love it. It's classic, yeah. Shaq. And he went on to say that if they want money from him, they've got to come up with like a business plan that's worth investing in, and they've got to sell him on it.
Yes. Shaq is a businessman.
Yeah. He said, "You got to earn it." And you know what? We're with Shaq on this one. Shaq wasn't just a successful basketball player. He's been successful in so many areas of his life, including parenthood, apparently. And I love that he's teaching his kids work ethic, and that his own good fortune and hard work don't translate to his kids riding his coattails and just automatically like get moving on to third base. He's saying, no, you got to hit that triple yourself. Mm-hmm. And a lot of baseball references in this episode. But I think it's just so good to see where Shaq's coming from on this. And I think you're going to make hardier kids as a result when, even if you have the resources, you don't just hand them over to your kids automatically.
That's right. I mean, this is a huge reason why none of our kids are on an allowance. If they want to earn money, they actually have to earn it. There are jobs they have to accomplish. And yes, like, they are a part of our family, and there's things that they do because they're just our kids. But that's not tied to money at all. That's just tied to roles in our family and responsibility and what it means to be, you know, a part of our household. Yes, we want them to know how to handle money and how to, you know, invest it and spend it, things like that. But the first thing that we have to learn how to do here is earn that money. That's why I think putting kids on commission is actually a great thing. thing to do. But we, like you said, we have to find a way to communicate to them that we love them, and that love equals money. Like, that is this way of thinking that we need to make sure that we push back against.
No doubt. It's tough to raise resilient kids who know how to handle money decently well. And so, yeah, and if you're wondering, well, how do I do that? What are some of the things I need to implement? Well, we just had Liz Frazier on the show. She talked all about how to teach your kids about money, and she talked about allowances, and that was a really good episode. I'd encourage you to go back and listen to that one if you missed it. But that's going to do it for today's episode. For listeners who want the show notes for today's episode to see the links to the articles that we discussed, you can go to our website at howtomoney.com.
That's right. And it's Friday, which means you've got all weekend to head over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your shows and leave us a solid review. If you have not yet done that, it's been a minute since we've asked for reviews, and we would really appreciate it. Helps others to find the show and helps us to continue to spread the word to ensure that other folks are out there doing smart things with their money.
No doubt. And we hope to see you if you're in Atlanta.
Yes.
Tonight.
Monday Night Garage, 7:45 tonight.
It's going to be a lot of fun. All right. That's going to do it, though, Matt. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.